You say you want a revolution. Well, you know.
Welcome, everybody. Thank you for joining us here on the Rational Revolution. I am your host, Mark Becker. I hope you are doing well today, and all is well with you. And if you missed last week's episode, go download that. It was so cool. It was we had Tammy Baldwin, Senator Tammy Baldwin, joined us in studio, nonetheless, and she was every bit as wonderful and brilliant as you would think. Had some great insights, and it's everything. Every episode that we have is available for download on the website. You can download like the podcast and listen to it and all that stuff. And you're probably going to want to hear this one too, because I am joined by the good doctor and dear friend and also 8th congressional candidate, Dr. Kristen Lierley is joining me here. How are you?
Hey, Mark. I'm so good. How are you?
Oh, I'm great. It's really good to talk to you. It's good to see you again. It's been a minute.
Thank you, brother. It has been a minute, and it feels like it's been years. I mean, even the last 2 weeks feels like it's been
my
a
God.
Decade, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. And like, we're going to talk about that because I want to hear your opinion on all things, you know, what's up. But how are you? You're coming to us from where?
I'm coming to you from northern Minnesota, where I am currently on call. So if the hospital calls.
You're out of here.
Pause for a minute.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, which is fine. We can do that. But and we're gonna talk about why you're there, mm-hmm. and all of that. But I kind of want to back up and give people just a little bit of a background on you and what brought you into politics in the first place. So talk about that.
Yeah. So I am a first generation college student, born and raised in Kaukauna, Wisconsin. I'm ghost proud.
Oh my.
I know. My family's been in the area for ages. Actually, my dad's whole side of the family worked at the mill, Filmini's.
Oh, wow.
My great-grandfather died at the mill.
What?
Of a heart attack. Of
Shut
a heart attack.
Up, really?
Nothing cagey.
That's not funny.
But it's not funny. But, you know, the cool thing is that back in the day, there was such loyalty to where you worked. And my grandfather tells the story of how they promised their entire family jobs. So my dad's whole family worked at the mill and they were really, really proud of it. And of course, Kaukauna is really proud of the mill too. You know, it's historically been so important to the history of the city. So that's my dad's side. My mom's side, they're all dairy farmers. They've been in the area, mostly just south of the Chilton area for six generations. So these are my people. All my cousins
right
are
on.
In the region. Yeah. And, you know, my parents had this dream for me to go to college because they weren't able to. And I got to do that. And once I got to college and I started seeing what some of the opportunities were in the world, figured out that maybe I was smart enough and good enough to be a doctor. I loved talking to people and I loved helping and solving problems. And sure enough, I got into school at the UW and ended up doing my OBGYN residency there and got involved with advocacy work. Because even back then in 2003, when I started, OBGYN, women's health, has always been political.
Yeah.
And so I felt like if I was going to actually be able to care for my patients, whether we were talking about really spicy issues like abortion or something as simple as menopause education, it sounds crazy, but you know, we got in medical school 30 minutes on menopause and an hour on manopause.
Seriously?
Which isn't actually, it's not actually
That's like
a
not
real
a thing.
Thing.
Yeah, right.
No, but that's where the disparities and health, like men have changes and men need healthcare. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But for women, it's an abrupt change in the middle of life and women need access to care.
We
and
have nothing
resources.
To compare us to that. No. Yeah.
No. God. So this is so much more than just the spicy abortion issue that people think about. Mm-hmm. So I got involved with advocacy work. I've been doing it for over two decades. And for me, the trigger to enter politics was in 2020 during COVID, when Governor Evers said, it's not safe for us to go to the polls in April of 2020. Remember what it was like in April of 2020?
Yeah.
Like, we didn't know, like, could you even get groceries? You know,
right.
Who could you talk to? Were masks appropriate. There were no treatments. It was just so scary. Mm-hmm. And in Green Bay, typically we have, 34, 35 polling places? We were down to two.
Two, yep. Mm-hmm. And we had more. There were more, but then it was because of the lack of poll workers and poll, you know, and people that were actually volunteering to do it. So it's like, you know, as I've talked to the mayor about this as well, Mayor Green Bay, and it was a staffing issue, because I don't blame him. Who would want to go into work that when thousands of people are going to be coming up to you in the middle of a global pandemic?
For sure. And you know who works these polls. I mean, these are not, 20-year-old kids.
Right.
These tend to be elderly folks who have health conditions and needed to protect themselves.
Yep.
So people showed up to work and people showed up to vote.
Yeah.
And seeing those lines of citizens who were committed to using their voices to make the change that they wanted to see, I was inspired by that.
Yeah.
And so that was what pushed me to run for state assembly, knowing that it was unlikely that I was going to win. We knew that our voting lines were just really grossly gerrymandered.
Yep.
But it just felt like something. Like, I just wanted to do something that could make a difference. And, we lost by 4 points, but that was okay, because that was the gateway to me meeting amazing people like you, Mark Becker.
Yes.
that was when we first met.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Yeah. And started, working with other groups of folks with like the Fair Maps Coalition. I got involved with that, got involved with helping Governor Evers get reelected and getting Janet Protasiewicz on the bench and continuing to do advocacy work. And then when Mike Gallagher vacated his seat and the congressional seat actually became in play, it was pretty obvious that this was the right next step for me.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about that later on a little bit. Well, not a little bit. We're going to talk about that a lot, because that's why you're here. But, I want to talk a little bit about what brings you to Minnesota. You got into OBG. What brought you to that profession, that side of medicine?
OBGYN?
Yes.
Oh, I just fell in love with it. I wasn't on a track where I was going to go to medical school. I had to figure all of that out. So as I was figuring, I ended up in Alaska and I was working
on
a remote island. I know, I've had some cool adventures.
What?
And I was working with this surgeon who was doing a C-section for his own nurse, and they invited me to scrub in, and I didn't know anything about anything. So there I got all gloved and gowned, like you see on TV.
Yeah, yeah.
And he made the incision and all this fluid came sporting out. She probably had too much fluid, and it got all over me, and it was so warm and slippery and amazing. And I know that sounds weird, but I was hooked. I thought, wow. Here we are. I know it's gross, but it was so cool. And the baby came out and everybody was so happy.
Yeah, yeah.
And, having followed her just for that month before her pregnancy, before her delivery, I just loved it. And the more I talked with people and understood what women's health meant to people and the stories that people would tell in these intimate exam room settings when it was just me and my patient, and they would share things that actually are pretty common, like, I'm peeing in my pants all the time. Are there any solutions for me? Mm-hmm. This happens a lot. Actually, it happens to more people than it doesn't happen to. And yes, there are solutions, but if you don't seek help, you're not going to find those solutions. They trust me to help them find those solutions. So it's a joy to deliver the kind of care that I deliver. But the thing that got me stuck up here in Minnesota, which is a wonderful place to practice, by the way, is when the Dobbs decision happened. I have been very outspoken about how this impacts women and babies and families. Mm-hmm. And I joined the Attorney General's lawsuit against the DAs to determine whether they were going to actually enforce this criminal abortion ban that had no exceptions, but for the life of the mother. And, when is the life of the mother in danger? It's just poorly defined. So women were just not getting the care that they needed, and somebody had to stand up. So I did that. And I'm proud to say that it's my name that's on the judgment in Dane County Circuit Court that brought abortion care back to Wisconsin. But the story isn't over, because that decision has been appealed and it is making its way up to the Wisconsin Supreme Court. In the meantime, the pro-life groups, which are truly anti-abortion groups, they filed a complaint against
anti-women, I would even say it to some degree.
Oh, to a large degree.
You know, yeah, right.
To a large degree. Used this issue because it's spicy, but it truly is so much more than just abortion.
Yes. Yeah, we're talking to Kristen Lierley, congressional candidate and a wonderful doctor here. Keep going. I'm sorry. So you were in Minnesota. You joined the lawsuit. And then what happened?
Well, I was in Wisconsin, but when they filed a complaint against my medical license, I knew that I would be a target.
Oh, yeah.
And that they would try to find ways to harm my profession and my practice. And, you know, like I said earlier, I am deeply committed to taking care of my patients. And there's a lack of doctors across the country, but certainly in rural areas, which is where I truly love to practice. So I've been up here in Minnesota for a year and a half, just traveling back and forth. They should have three OBGYN doctors at this hospital. They have one.
Oh my God.
So I see
really?
Patients in clinic. Yeah. I do surgeries. I man the hospital. I do it all up here.
And oh my gosh.
They're so grateful because otherwise these hospitals are closing down. Wisconsin has lost half of their rural obstetrical units in the past 20 years because we can't staff them. We can't afford them. And that means that families aren't getting the care that they need.
Yeah, no. And that is something that is huge. We go to Prevea and I remember just recently there was a lot of their rural clinics and options for people that have shut down. So yeah, it's really alarming, you know, but I think it's kind of, you know, I don't even know what to call it, but you know, it's the people that speak out was a good trouble. You know, you got into some good trouble when you spoke out and tried to defend, and I think did a marvelous job articulating the needs that women do have. And it is unfortunate that so many of these organizations that profess to stand up, you know, courageously for the rights of the unborn, really what that means is it's almost Handmaid's Tale-esque of pushing women aside, pushing them down and keeping, you know, control over them, their bodies and their decisions. And it's something that really is a huge issue in today's society. And we're going to continue this discussion with Dr. Kristen Lierley on the other side of the break. We'll see you in a little bit. You know, Todd plays some good tunes, doesn't he?
He does.
Gosh.
I love Todd's pick.
Yeah, we're here talking with Dr. Kristen Lierley, who is a dear friend and an 8th congressional candidate for office here. We were talking about just kind of the overall, movement of the pro-life stuff. And when I was in the Republican Party, infamously, I guess, you know, one of the big things that we were involved with, and I was always pro-choice, so that was, go figure that one. But
it didn't used to be this divided.
No, it didn't.
I mean, think back even a decade ago, and it wasn't. If you're a Republican, you're pro-life, which is anti-abortion, and if you're a Democrat, you're pro-choice, which is, you know, you get to make your own decisions. It used to be people could have a variety of different decisions. Everything's gotten so deeply polarized, and they just drive that message home over and over and over again, so you're not hearing messages from the middle or from the other side, and that is just perpetuating the problem.
Yeah, and I think, you know, so much of that message is they're talking about like having an abortion after birth. Like that's not a thing. That doesn't happen.
That does not happen. Period.
No, and because that's like whatever. And so I think so many people when they think of that and they think of like a late term abortion, which is what, like 0.5% of the procedures that actually happen in the United States. It's so minuscule, but it's, and when that happens, and I think about this, when a late term abortion happens, it's not someone saying, I'm not ready to be a parent, so I'm going to take this pill because I just found out 2 weeks ago that I am 4 weeks along. If there is a late term abortion, these are parents that have a nursery set up. These are parents that have picked out names for this child. These are parents that are thrilled that they are adding a life to their family and find out something horrific, the unthinkable. Find out that there's no chance of viability of this child. And to see those parents and the news that they got, and to see that situation kicked around like a cheap political football is disgusting.
It is disgusting. It's traumatic. It tears families apart. So for a party that talks a lot about families, these situations cause separations and divorces because they're heartbreaking. You know, anybody who has been through a pregnancy and knows what it's like as you're approaching that 20-week mark, that's where we do the ultrasound, where we look for all the stuff. The fetus is finally developed enough where you can see all the structures and determine, are there things here that we need to think about as we're, you know, moving on with this pregnancy? And can you imagine how horrifying it is to, like you said, Mark, you've got the nursery ready, you've got names picked out, you've told everybody in your life that you're pregnant, and suddenly you find out your baby doesn't have a brain.
Right.
Now what? And the trauma of that moment. And then what do we do now? What are our options? Where do we go from here? And some people would say, this is my baby, and I know what the risks and benefits are. I know that carrying this pregnancy to term is actually 18 times more dangerous for me. Birth is not a free ride. Pregnancy is a medical condition. And let me tell you, it is hard on your body and it can be fatal.
It's dangerous.
So if
it's
dangerous. So if you decide to continue the pregnancy, it's more dangerous than deciding to terminate the pregnancy. But if someone chooses to do that, then we support them 100%. But we're also walking with them on that journey, making sure they understand what's happening, what to expect. It's there's so much that goes along with that. And your faith is tied up in that, your social supports, your resources, the expense. I mean, there's so much that goes into it. And that's why you have to be the person who makes that decision, not the government.
Right. And you know, for a party that wants government out of people's lives.
Yes.
I think some, just what hypocrisy that they want to be out of people's lives, except for the most intimate parts of it, like who they lay next to in their bed and what they do with bringing life into this world. It's such a disgrace, and it's wrong. And that's why I think, you know, until that GOP flips that switch, you know, it's, and when we saw, there was Mike Pence, who said one of the reasons why he doesn't want to endorse Donald freaking Trump, other than the fact that he, you know, didn't care if he lived or died, is the fact that
the hanging thing.
The hanging thing. Yeah. but it was Pence, you know, it's crazy because like he'll have one iota of like good faith and like courage. And then he goes, well, Donald Trump doesn't want to stand up for the unborn. It's there we go. Mm-hmm. You know, whatever.
But wait, Mike Pence's kids are IVF kids.
I didn't know that. No kidding.
Yeah. This is not hilarious. A secret. This is published information. And you know who else whose grandchildren are IVF kids? Mm. Ron Johnson.
My buddy. My buddy, Ron. Oh, yeah.
Your buddy, Ron.
Yeah, get him on the show here. He doesn't like me. He doesn't return my calls, you know, whatever.
Not anymore.
Right. But go ahead.
So you are a former Republican.
Yes.
I was never a card-carrying Republican, but I always voted Republican as a young person. Mm. I don't remember this level of hypocrisy in the GOP when I was a member of the party. But, you know, then I look at J.D. Vance and I look at the complete like 180 he's done in the past 8 years. I mean, he was calling Trump Hitler. And now he's his running mate. And that is one thing. Even something as simple as a national abortion ban. He was supporting a national abortion ban. He was saying no exceptions for rape and incest. And now he's saying something completely different. We need to hold them to this standard. And I know we're used to Donald Trump lying because that's what he does. But the hypocrisy is it's just gotten to a point where it's unbelievable.
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, I that was one of the reasons why. And we talked about it. I think it was on the last show where the big reason that I left the party was because, you know, it was me and, you know, Charlie Sykes and some people in the state legislature. We were never Trump. We can't support this guy. And then all of a sudden, Trump wins the nomination, and you look around, and there, all of these people are kissing the ring and doing a 180, and it's like, okay, well, this is ridiculous. And so, you know, and I think it we had a little bit of this during the Tea Party in like 2010, where it was, you know, text enough already, and you saw kind of the crazies come out of the woodwork, and then they found their demigod in Trump that just sent this into hyperdrive, you know, and all of the worst characteristics of that society, that part of politics has just boiled to the surface. And it's dangerous. It's dangerous for your patients. It's dangerous for people of Wisconsin. It's dangerous for the country. And we're going to talk a lot about your race because I want to hear all about this here on the other side. So we'll talk to Kirsten Leierling, keep this discussion going. See you back in a bit. Welcome back here on the Rational Revolution. I am Mark Becker, your host. We're talking with Dr. Kirsten Leierling, and we're getting to the point. So we went through 2020. We see all this stuff. You ran for state assembly. The districts are crazy whacked out. Now they're not. We're talking about that in a little bit. But here you are. You're running for Congress.
Yeah, who'd have thunk?
Who'd have thought?
You know, I think about my parents who both died young, and I just wonder what they would think about. You know, when I'm elected, I'll be the first woman to serve in the 8th Congressional District.
I didn't know
but
that.
I'll only be the third woman that Wisconsin has sent to Washington, D.C.
Come on.
Only the third. Isn't that crazy?
Was it Gwen Moore and then?
Tammy Baldwin.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, who could forget? No kidding. Really?
But here's the difference in this cycle. The Dobbs decision has given us a voice and has made so many people say, all right, I can't take this anymore. I have to stand up. And that's what we're seeing in Assembly District 1 with Renee Peplum, in Senate District 2 with Kelly Peterson. All over Northeast Wisconsin, we have more women running for office than men.
That's spectacular. That's cool. Yeah, I think
that's Jane Benson,
yep, she's
Alicia Saunders, yep. Chris Alfheim, of course.
Yes.
Come on.
Well, yeah.
Yes.
Oh, God, we love Chris.
Well, that, yes.
And, you know, what's interesting is we were talking to Senator Baldwin last week, and we were kind of talking about Joe Biden, what's going to happen. And I made the comment about how, you know, with all the uncertainty at the top of the ticket, obviously that's resolved itself. But, you know, what is the rising tide that's going to lift all of the ships? And she made a great point. She said, you know, normally it is the top of the ticket that brings everybody up. But because we have these new maps, she says, I really believe that the rising tide is going to come from everybody underneath.
It is. And here's a great example. Emily Cephos. She's running for the 56th in the Appleton area. She's been canvassing out in New London. We were just chatting yesterday. All of the candidates are working together.
That's great.
And again, I think that is unprecedented. And Emily was telling me about the conversation she's having at the doors and how people who typically identify as Republicans are taking her signs and are pledging to vote for her because they're finding all of this common ground. And we know the common ground is there, but we are so reluctant to have these conversations because we're so afraid that somebody from the other side is not going to like us or that we're going to create that conflict. We've got to have these conversations. And by having all of these energized state candidates from Andy Rich up in Marinette, all the way down to Chris in Appleton and Renee Peplum over in Door County, all the way over to Shirley Hinsey, who's running in Shawano County, it is so inspiring. And the guys too, this is not just about women. This is about all of us working together. So Ryan Spouty and Ben Murray, I mean, I could just
Ryan's good.
There are so many good folks who are inspiring and doing this because they feel like the people of Wisconsin have not been heard. We've seen what's happened to our legislature over the past 10 years.
Yeah.
We've seen that these folks who are only elected because of the way that they've been drawn into their districts are not having to respond to the voters. And it's made the voters feel like they don't have representation because they haven't. But that all changes this November.
So Dr. Kristen Lilley, how do you logistically do this? How do you run a congressional campaign and then also like have to work, you know, it's so far away. How do you do that?
Well, Mark, I'm a woman.
Well, yeah, that's true.
So I can juggle these things.
You know, it's hilarious. So I saw a clip of like Gerald Ford. Someone asked Gerald Ford what happens when a woman becomes president. And he gave this brilliant answer, but then he said, you know, there's also when a woman becomes president, they're going to have a hard time. Men are going to have a hard time getting that office back because a woman is just going to do so much better than what a man will. So I totally believe that. But, you know, like how do you juggle that? I can't fathom that.
Well, it's all about help. So I'm a mom. I didn't mention this early on, but I have 4 sons. They are holding the fort at home. They're all involved in the campaign. My son,
cool.
Abe, was my campaign manager back in 2020.
Yep,
now
right.
He's a public school teacher down in Racine.
Oh,
so
cool.
He's got the summer off and he's been pitching in. And my other boys are delivering yard signs and helping with messaging and talking to their friends. My son, Lindsay, will vote for the first time this November.
Oh,
so
that'll be a cool story.
To be able to vote for your mom. It's just so neat. So they're handling the home front and then the campaign. My team is incredible. We talked about the state candidates and how we're coordinating, mentoring, supporting, promoting each other. They are the ground game, and that is incredibly important, as Tammy Baldwin acknowledged. But then my campaign itself, my campaign manager, Madeline Buchholz-Nieland, is so focused, so professional. She's excellent. My finance team is really, everybody is very coordinated. So when I'm here, we're talking. We've already chatted this morning.
Yeah.
I've got another meeting coming up soon. There's a lot that's happening. And I just squeeze it in between patients in the morning before I go into work, at night. If I'm watching a laboring patient over the weekend, I'm doing campaign work in between. This is my hobby, other than riding my bike, which I do for clarity and exercise. This is my hobby and I love it. And I know that the work that we're doing truly does have the potential to change the direction in our country. And I want to say this again, in Northeast Wisconsin, we are one of 3 swing states.
Yeah.
We will determine the direction of our country and where we are in particular, because so many people are independent voters. People aren't locked into a party. People are locked into community. They're locked into common ground. They're locked into helping each other. That's what we're tapping into because that's what we care about as well.
Yeah. And I want to, so why Congress? You know, why not? Because the maps stayed the same in Congress, in the Senate assembly districts and all that stuff. They're different. So why Congress? Why was this the place?
Because so as it's a system, it's a process. So as we were looking at the new maps, I wasn't the only person who was interested in this seat. Kelly Peterson came forward and said she wanted to run for the 8th CD. And Alicia Saunders also came forward and said she wanted to run. And we put our heads together and said, we're going to get new maps. And we need to build a deep bench of potential candidates, not scramble at the last minute when we know what the maps are, but we need to have people who are ready to go. So let's not challenge each other. Let's work together. Yeah. That was when we worked with Julie Hancock and developed Women Win Wisconsin.
Talk about
with
that.
The idea. Oh, yes. Yeah. That's the origin story. It's all about unity. It's all about mentorship and sponsorship and supporting each other because we have this shared goal of a brighter future for all of us. So when the new maps came out, I initially was thinking about running for state senate. That works much better with my medical career than I'd be able to practice and serve in the Senate. Yeah. You know, I loved that idea, but I wasn't in a district that's up this year. So Kelly was, and Alicia was, and a number of the other candidates who ended up running for the seats that they're running in, they were neatly placed in their spots. But we didn't have a candidate for Congress. And with abortion being such a big issue right now and reproductive rights, with the profile that I have from all of the advocacy work that I've been doing over the last couple of years, this was just the right place and the right time for me. So ultimately, my goal is to be effective. I want to be part of the solution. And this is the right way to do it right now.
Yeah. And I think, you know, Congress could use someone with that level of expertise when that subject is so hotly contested and discussed in all areas of, you know, politics. I think that would be wonderful. You know, yeah, Wisconsin would be very well served. And talk about... you know, now we talk about women winning Wisconsin. We have an opportunity for a pretty important woman to win Wisconsin in Vice President Kamala Harris.
Yeah.
What do you think that's going to do? Yeah. Oh, no. Yeah. Keep going.
Before I mention, you know, how incredible I think she is, and we just went on record and endorsed her today.
Oh, good.
I just want to mention that there are no pro-choice OBGYN doctors in Congress right now. There are two anti-choice, I'm talking like severe anti-abortion people, OBGYN docs, but no pro-choice OBGYN docs. So I'll be the first.
Okay.
And I say that I'll be the first because we have a special election. So I'll be seated in November because of the special. And my colleague in Minnesota, Kelly Morrison, who is also an OBGYN doc and has done some incredible work in the state of Minnesota, she will also be a pro-choice OBGYN doc. So working together, we will be able to elevate this issue, women's healthcare in general, and having voices like ours are essential for the conversation. Politicians are making these decisions about our healthcare in a very uninformed way or in a way where lobbyists are influencing their decision making. Well, now they can be influenced by people who are actually doing the work on the ground and actually hear from patients.
And talk about the election too, because I don't think people realize that it's not the November election. This is before that because Congressman Gallagher left, right? So talk about that.
Yeah, this is a wide open seat.
Yeah.
So Congressman Gallagher vacated the seat, so we don't currently have representation. Governor Evers called a special election, and it is actually in tandem with the general election. So in August, my name appears on the ballot twice, once for the special election, once for the general election, and it'll be the same thing in November. So you got to vote twice. Please do, because we got to fill this seat in November for that lame duck session, and then the regular Congress starting in January.
That's crazy. And so we have, I think there's the Republican opponent is not quite known yet. There's there's the guy that has Trump endorsed on all of his signs, which is like, whatever. It's a cult. It was a Senator Andre Jacques, who I have strong opinions on as well, and Roger Roth.
Yeah, they're having a debate. They had one last Friday. They're having another one, I think, today. They're just trying to, you know, climb all over each other and get as far to the right as possible. It's tough to watch all three of them.
Right.
are extreme when it comes to women's health. Andre Jacques wants
he is
no
the worst,
abortion.
I think.
No abortion for any reason, including the life of the mother.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes. So if a woman shows up bleeding and dying, I'm supposed to put my hands behind my back and just let her die? I mean, absolutely not. So I find that incredibly
offensive.
Offensive. I mean,
disgusting. And it's what's interesting, Dr. Kristen Lierley here, we get a congressional candidate. What's so interesting is how, like, these haughty gentlemen think that they should be in charge of anyone else's body, you know. And I Andre and I, when I was Republican chairman, we got in it hard because I was pro marriage equality. Oh my God. He called me swearing, chewing me out and all this stuff because I was very outspoken about that. And the stuff that he said to me, oh my God, like, I can't even imagine how, you know, and he wears the little footprint lapel, you know, how dangerous any of those guys would be if they got elected.
Well, Andre in particular, this is a guy who is touting his anti-establishment history, but, you know, I read that as,
which is BS.
He's hard to work. Well, he's hard to work with.
Correct.
So how do you find common ground when your beliefs and your desire to get things done is so extreme that you can't reach across the aisle and find that bipartisan agreement?
He had to move because he was drawn out of his district because Assembly Republicans couldn't stand him. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's the guy that's on the ballot. You know, it's not okay. But you know, I hope that you're able to find some time to come back on the show and talk about how your campaign is going, because, you know, I do think it would be, you know, obviously there's historic to have you representing us, but I think it would be, you know, a warm breath of comfort, I think, for this district to have you be our representative and our voice in Washington, D.C. Dr.
I'm
Kristen Lierley.
I'm going to carry those words in my heart, Mark. Warm breath of comfort.
Thank you. Thank
you
so much. You come back, okay? Thank you so much to Dr. Kristen Lierley. We'll see you for my thoughts on the other end. You tell me that it's evolution. Well, you know. We all want to change the world. But if you want money for people with minds that hate, all I can tell you is, brother, you have to wait. Welcome back to the Rational Revolution. Thank you so much for joining me and us in this journey. I don't know. I've had a week of gratitude from a lot of different places to, you know, I don't know why, but I think stepping back and looking at where you are and what you're doing, and, you know, it's a cool thing. And so, you know, I'm always so appreciative of the opportunity to do this and civic media and my dear friend Todd that helps me not sound like an idiot every week. It's a cool thing. And so I'm so grateful for all of that. And you know, I wanted to talk a little bit about the times that we're in, and I try to, you know, put it in perspective, and it's so hard, you know, because we, for the first time in decades, there was, you know, an assassination attempt on a president, which is horrible. And now, again, a week later, for the first time in decades, we have a president voluntarily not seeking reelection. What was that, first time since like 1968 that it's happened? And thinking about all of these things, you know, I think about the summer of 1968, which is widely regarded as one of the most tumultuous times in the history of the United States. You know, you had, you know, Bobby Kennedy and Martin Luther King and all of these, you know, the Great Awakening with civil rights and all of this. There's so many parallels to what's going on now. And we were in Boston for vacation, and we went to Salem, and there was this house of the judge that condemned all of these young kids to die. And there was a wonderful trans woman that was there. And she was talking about, I asked her, you know, was this the end of the Puritan era? And she said, that's a great question. I think that this time, because not many people know this, but that whole Salem witch trials, that was like a 6-month period. That was it. And she said this time of upheaval, it really marked the end of that Puritan way of thinking. And every time society goes through a change like that, there's a big moment, whether it's civil war, whether it's, you know, Salem witch trials and all these things. And we're going through that, I believe, right now. And when we record this, it was yesterday, last night, that Joe Biden made his remarks to the nation, discussing why he chose to step down. And honestly, it was God, the mixed emotions when I was watching that. It was really hard to watch, but I was so proud. I was so proud that I voted for that man 4 years ago. It was hard to watch because, you know, if you followed politics for any length of time, Joe Biden is the scrappy fighter from Scranton. He's the guy that talks big, takes on big ideas, and never backs down. But this Joe Biden was quiet, reserved, and kind of almost defeated as he was speaking to the nation on Wednesday night. And the part that was difficult to watch was, I think so many Americans can painfully relate to kind of seeing that episode play out on national TV. They could relate to it by saying, you know, mom, dad, you shouldn't do something that you love, you know, drive or go places, or maybe it's time to get some assistance. And what a painful thing that is. But in a very different way, it was beautiful and inspiring. And it was so moving. I truly believe that when history judges the words that Joe Biden spoke on Wednesday, his speech will go down as one of the most consequential speeches in American history. What courage, what selfless courage Joe Biden had to possess to step aside and, as he said, pass the torch to a younger generation. He said, I revere this office, but I love my country more. It is selfless. And at the risk of like over glorifying this moment, I look at, it's almost George Washington level. I truly believe that that action at this moment exemplifies the absolute seriousness about the depth of the level of consequence that we are at right now, that this historic time of choosing. It was almost, as I'm watching him, and he did great. It was brilliant. But it was almost like a farewell address in a way. You know, one line that stuck with me is when he said, I give my heart and soul to this nation. Like so many others, I have been blessed a million times in return by the love and the support of the American people. You have no idea how grateful I am to all of you. How incredible to utter those words at this time, you know? And he said, the defense of democracy, which is at stake, is more important than any title. He said, I draw strength and I find joy in working for the American people, but this sacred task of protecting our union is not about me. It's about you, your families, your future. It's about we, the people. And how fitting for Joe Biden's presidency to end in the same way which it began, by telling the American people that we are in a battle over the soul of our nation, and the future of democracy is at stake. How poignant. And one of the things that he said as well is The great thing about America is here kings and dictators do not rule. The people do. History is in your hands. The power is in your hands. The idea of America itself lies in your hands. And it does. The American people, he said, will choose the course of America's future. Whether we keep our republic is now in your hands, he said. It's in our hands, you guys. And it's such an honor. And I'm so grateful to be able to blab on this microphone once a week to all of you. And I feel a spirit of kinship a little bit in being able to talk about these big things, these big ideas at this big moment in the history of our country. So thank you. We'll see you next week at the Rational Revolution.
Feeling near as faded as my jeans. Bobby thumbed a diesel down.